You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dehati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. For those of you listening, the normal means of doing so. You don't also know that we are live in studio at the Wheaton College Billy Graham Center studio, and a lot of you are actually watching this via video and are in other locations. So thanks for joining us. We're going to be talking today about something about narratives. Explain more about that in just a moment. I've got with me two guests, co-hosts today, right? Michael Crawford and Clint Clifton. And Michael is the Send Network Director for Maryland, Delaware. He's an LA native, graduate of Master's Seminary in California, pastored several churches on the West Coast before moving to Baltimore, where he planted Freedom Church. Michael and his wife, Danny, did I say it right, Danny? Okay. Have five children and live in Baltimore. Clint Clifton is the founding pastor of Pillar, a family of multiplying churches in military communities. Both, by the way, are authors of books. I don't know. Michael Crawford wrote Don't Plant, Be Planted. Clint wrote Church Planting Thresholds, a Gospel-Centered Church Planting Guide. Let me remind you that we have resources available all for free at newchurches.com. One of them is I've written with Matt Rogers, and we're offering, again, for free over at newchurches.com. It's an ebook called Building Your Core Team, Models and Best Practices. So if you're ready and interested in recruiting a core team for a new church or a campus, are you currently leading a team? Both of these are paths that this will be a helpful resource for you. We've created this resource just for you. You can get the book free, no strings attached, over at newchurches.com. Our partnership with newchurches.com has led to the podcast is growing like hotcakes. We've got all free resources available at newchurches.com. Okay, so enough said. We're going to start and go over to Michael. Michael, good to have you. We're on video. People listening to audio, they're not impressed with the video-ness of this, but I am. So start us off today talking a little bit about the role narratives play in church planning, why you think narratives are so important for church leaders to understand. Talk to us a little bit about that. And Tyler, let's make sure his sound comes through just as we need it. Go ahead.
I think narratives, in my opinion, are the dominant way by which people are perceiving and processing and doing life today. And a narrative, as I understand it, it's kind of like a micro paradigm that enables you to see an issue a certain way and to process through it and to then come up with, this is how I'm going to respond to this issue. So we have multiple narratives flowing through our country in regards to politics, race, economy, presidents, wars, the COVID crisis has multiple narratives. And depending on which narrative you subscribe to is how you're going to behave. So since it appears that culture is moving in that way, a new church needs to be aware that that's where culture is going. So as new churches interact with people, they're really interacting with these micro narratives. Mm-hmm. And so the issue then becomes is, am I equipped to take the gospel and to help people understand these micro narratives through the lens of the Bible, through the lens of who God is and what he's done in the world? And it also can help new churches understand why they're encountering some things that are frustrating for them.
It's good. Clint, you're supposed to ask the next question. It says right there on the thing. So right there on the sheet of paper.
Well,
it says right there.
It says, ask Clint.
Oh, so it's not Clint ask, no. It's ask. Clint.
In other words, say ask Clint. Clint.
It does say that, doesn't it? Clint.
Yes, Ed.
We'll leave that in just for the fun, since I'm totally wrong. Okay, so Mike gave us a bit of a definition. In your experience working with church planners, what's your assessment of how well church planners understand and explain their own narrative in that journey?
Yeah, well,
I asked Clint that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Because it says right in the notes to do that.
Well, first of all, This is the first conversation I've ever had about the subject of narratives. And when Mike suggested this topic, I had to sit for a few minutes and ponder what maybe he means by
it. Sure. It's kind of a thing.
Yeah. It makes total sense, but no, I don't think this is something we're thinking about or talking mm-hmm. about. And as I thought about it a little bit, I think church planters are taught to describe their own narrative, like in pitching themselves and their new churches. But I don't think there are many conversations happening about the narratives going on in their community around them and how that affects the day-to-day ministry that they're doing, much less the national narratives that might be happening. So, I don't think this is a conversation that's happening very much, and I can see the value in having it.
Yeah, I want to ask. I know it says ask Ed, but yeah. I want to. So how would you then see or say? Now, I've been talking about exegeting your community for a long time.
Yeah.
So cultural exegesis, I think, is a key part of the church planner's work to understand the context, to understand what people are thinking. So this is kind of layered into some of that. So what would it look like for considering my own narrative and how it might intersect with the narratives of the culture around?
Yeah. So at the bottom of that is an element of self-awareness, right? Mm-hmm. I have to be aware of my own narrative, where it comes from.
Sure.
And then exegete a community means narratives, understanding their narratives. Mm-hmm. And with the way culture is now, it is being broken down into these micro narratives,
oh, sure.
AKA TikTok, Instagram, yeah. YouTube channels.
Hold on 1 second. TikTok's what the cool kids
use. Oh,
I just wanted you to know that, Clint.
Okay. Yeah,
just wanted up to speed.
Yeah. And our people are being influenced mm-hmm. in their thinking. So to exegete a community has to take into account that they're being influenced by these micro narratives. And so I think to do that accurately means like, hey, I kind of need to know that. And I should probably be aware of my own narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, my sister, she was very sick. She had cancer and she was just coming to understand the faith really well. And she's reading the Bible. Her question to me as she was reading the Bible was this, where do I fit in?
Okay.
That's a very powerful question.
Yeah.
What she's really saying is, in my mind, in my narrative, I don't know where my place is in redemptive history.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does a person like me get in?
Right.
Would God ever take a person like me at this phase of my life? Like, she couldn't make the two match.
Right. Right.
So I had the privilege of showing her all these people that God brought into his narrative,
mm-hmm.
if you know what I mean.
Right.
That the gospel narrative is whosoever believes.
Right.
Which is beautiful. It's an extension to all people to come be a part of God's divine narrative. And I think that was a beautiful thing, just in terms of helping her to see that you can be a part
of it. So we have the meta-narrative,
yes.
What God is doing. You know, we can go creation, fall, redemption, restoration, different ways to explain the drama of Scripture and more. But then people ask, how does my narrative intersect with maybe that meta-narrative? So, but as a church planter, I'm on a missionary activity, and Clint, I'll throw this one to you. As a church planter, I'm on a missionary activity, so I want to understand the narratives of our community. So, I might look at, I planted a church in North Georgia in a community that was historically known for its racism. It was called a sundown town, and so that's part of the narrative of that community. So we actually brought one of the core values of our church was to seek and build towards multi-ethnicity and more. So the narrative of the community even impacted the narrative of our church, our narrative and more. I guess the challenge is let's go very basic. How am I supposed to learn those narratives in a community? What does it look like for me or you going in? I need to learn the narratives.
Well, one of the first things that comes to mind when you say that is what most church planters do is they borrow someone else's narrative,
right.
In terms of when they're crafting how their church is going to respond to what's going on in their community or in the culture around them. They say, oh, that church over there in that city, I really like how they do it. And I want to mimic that model.
Yeah, sure. People literally try to mimic a model.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's the absolute wrong way to go about it. Mm-hmm. The thing God has given us the opportunity to do is to go into a community to discover it and then to be a part of the creative process of co-laboring with God to bring the gospel to that community. And that's unique in every community. And so there isn't really a cookie cutter way to do that from place to place. So there are some places too, like the community I live in. I was just thinking, you know, as we're talking, what's the narrative of my community? Well, the narrative of my community is a whole bunch of other communities came to one place.
Yeah.
And so the narrative of my community is it's a transient mixed place where people come for a short period of time. And so that that does shape the way we're going to do ministry. It shapes how, you know, the types of programs we have, the types of the way that I interact with people. It shapes everything about the ministry on the ground.
Yeah. And I would say with a caution to those who are listening is that when we think about, you know, it might feel very complex, right? It might be like, this is just overwhelming. How can I know? I mean, everyone's got their own personal narrative and more, but there are prevailing narratives in a cultural context in the community. So, you know, when I was in Erie, Pennsylvania planting, this is like almost a white collar / blue collar community. It may be white collar, but it thinks blue collar. Mm-hmm. It's got a history of manufacturing that sort of died away. So knowing, I want to be an expert in the narrative of the community,
yeah,
acknowledging that each person still has their own journey and their own story. But simultaneously, I want to acknowledge that individuals kind of walk that. So I might be in a community and the Latino community might be within our community and have a different journey and a different story. So knowing that makes a difference. So Michael, to you, sometimes people, planters, misread or misunderstand some of the prevailing narratives in a community. What's that look like when that happens, and how can maybe a church planter's listening right now and says, how do I address that?
I think you need to be humble, because we're not perfect, and it's possible for us to misread in our exegesis, and we need to be quick on our feet to pivot. That's one of your words. To be able to pivot and say, and here is the, I think, the demonstrative kind of effect of misreading. It's going to be relational dysfunction. At some point, there will be a significant amount of relational dysfunction, and that's when you need to be able to say, okay, well, maybe I misread this wrong. And a simple way to do that is to go back to whoever you're talking to or the group and to begin to ask them the questions all over again. Am I getting this right? Am I seeing this right? Did I hear you right? Are you saying that this is what's important to you? And are you saying that you don't believe that, you know, in this case, Christianity speaks to this issue or that issue? And making it's clarity. It's what it's about. You know, when we're talking about, I was thinking about illustrations of this. John 4, for Jews have no
dealings. Hold on one second. Clint, that's in the Bible.
Oh, thanks.
Okay. You're like never coming to the studio again, are you?
Hey, really? I'm happy to be the whipping post. It's cool.
Right. I never was this way with Daniel M. I don't know why I'm this way with
Daniel. That's fine. I'm easy to pick on.
All right. Sorry. So keep going.
Yeah. John 4, where it's that little phrase, for Jews have no dealings with Samaritans.
Yeah.
That's a narrative.
Yeah.
So that was shaping the culture of the Jews and the Samaritans. And what do you see Jesus do? He goes into that narrative, and as he typically is, he's disruptive of a narrative that is carnal.
Yeah.
And then everyone's asking questions. We see it at Mars Hill. Paul goes into their narrative to an unknown God. Mm-hmm. They had a narrative of how they understood things, and Paul goes in there with the gospel. The God you worship is unknown. Let me tell you about him. And you really see this all over the Bible. That's what we're saying. It's a key missiological trait to be able to understand a narrative and graciously and humbly bring people to God's meta narrative and show them how it fits in.
Ed, you're definitely different than the two of us. You're in the national narrative. You're shaping the national narrative in some ways, especially for the church. What are you seeing in the national narrative that church planners aren't paying attention to and don't understand and should probably understand?
So you're going to be nice to me, even though I wasn't nice to you. You're going to say nice.
That's what Jesus does.
That's what Jesus does. I perceive that. My narrative is not going well in this episode. Please forgive us. Yeah. So I would say, too, that we are looking right now. Like I've written about the great sort.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's happening is people's narratives are being shaped in different ways. I've said they're being discipled by their cable news choices, spiritually shaped by their social media feed. And I think what happens is the end result is that their narrative. So there are people who have a narrative that, people at the very extremes who might have a narrative that there's a storm coming, and they might have a QAnonish kind of narrative.
Yeah.
that evil elites are sort of taking over and controlling everything. Other people might have a narrative that the future is going to be embraced as we embrace, you know, all kinds of identities of gender and sexual identities. And they can be driven by, you know, two examples. Mm. But I would say that there are national narratives that we as Christians need to acknowledge. And sometimes the narrative points us to gospel opportunity. And that's one of the things I don't want people to miss, because I do think that in the midst of everyone's story or national story or more, that there are heroes and there are villains. And ultimately, the opportunity for us is to point them to a different way, to a different narrative, to a different story. I think that's ultimately where the good news of the gospel can come in. But to answer your question, man, I'm like trying to figure out how best to describe that. It's a great question. So think in terms of the narrative of some Christians right now are buying into a narrative, for example, that Christianity is being persecuted. And because they see that as persecution, they will act in light of that narrative. I would say that there are some places where Christians are being pushed back on and there are challenges, even a point of employment, things of that sort. So persecution is a very strong word. But I'm a little concerned that some Christians are being caught up in a hyper-political narrative that politics will save us, or that that you know our own engagement in social media will save us. And at the end of the day, I think ultimately we need to point them back to the better and the biblical narrative.
Yeah.
Which points us, I think, to a different,
path. Those narratives collide when somebody becomes a member of your church and they've been discipled by cable news, as you say. Yeah.
And even to the left and to the right. So yeah, it's important absolutely. To note that. And they come in. And one of the challenges is right now, and again, using the language I used in the article about the great sort, is that they're coming into your church ideologically already primed and pumped. And you're trying to have a theological conversation about a theological narrative. And they want that. They want you to ideologically align with them and their understanding. So again, narratives are not just the great sort, but I think that's certainly part of that. And I think that's kind of key. So to you, Mike, you know, one of the questions then is, you know, narratives are changing, you know, communication. We can fall into ruts. We can be around just ourselves, or people like us, get into a Facebook group that's people like us. How do we avoid repeating the same old story or getting stuck in the rut of our narrative, but instead engaging people? There's a prevailing narrative in a community, individual narratives. How do we actually act like a missionary in sort of some of those contexts as church planters?
I think the easy answer is we have to determine who or what's going to have the final say on narratives. Okay. Because that's the end all be all, right? If it's cable news, if it's your favorite YouTuber or Instagrammer or whatever, or if it's the Bible. And then if it's a Bible, my concern is that in a content-driven age, we are in a culture of information transactions, and we're not as focused on transformation as we are acquisition of content. And so you have people you're going to interact with as a church planter that are really hungry for content, but not so it'll actually change who I am, right? Or change my mind. But that's exactly why the Bible was written. So the short answer is it's got to be scripture. It's got to be the Bible has the final say on my narrative and your narrative, and I can graciously walk with you through that. And that will lead to transformation. Mm. Otherwise, you have literal chaos, because it's basically a war on who's epistemology or whose source is better, right? Yeah. Well, this news agency is more credible than that one, when really it's just about scripture. And scripture comes in. Jesus tends to come into all of our narratives, and he has something to say about all of our narratives. Mm-hmm. And there's always, as you say, a gracious invitation to come and walk with him. And sometimes that means you got to leave aspects of your narrative. Mm-hmm. And that's how you avoid falling into ruts. You want to stay in a rut, stay away from Jesus. Read the Bible as a content-driven book where you acquire knowledge, not transformation, right. And you'll stay in a rut. And another way to stay in a rut is to be a monolithical in your approach. Clint mentioned earlier, pick somebody who's doing well. I'm just going to do what they do.
Right.
Stay in you mentioned about when you planted a church, you engaged the narrative. But sure. It also meant engaging your own narrative.
For sure.
And the people who are with you.
Yeah.
I just think God always pushes you out of your personal narrative into his. And that means transformation, aka Moses. He didn't want to go. God was like, you're coming into my narrative. Mm-hmm. So we have to deal with yours. So that's the way to do it.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast. We're actually, those of you watching video, we're in the studio here where we do the Stetzer Church Leaders podcast. We'll have a crossover episode as well. Thanks for listening. Let me encourage you, as always, to go back to newchurches.com. The resources are there provided for you. Thanks to my co-hosts, Mike and Clint. We're going to continue our conversation on future episodes. Do me a favor, like, share, whatever the magical thing does on wherever you download your podcast. Leave a review so other folks can find this and be a helpful resource for them. Thanks for listening to the New Churches podcast.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.